Lecture 45, The Protestant Reformation, John Calvin.
Welcome back once again to our series of lectures on the foundations of Western civilization. This lecture, number 45 in the series, will continue our discussion of the Protestant Reformation. Indeed, in this lecture, we'll explore what we might call the Reformation within the Reformation. Or perhaps, to look at it a little differently, we'll explore the reasons why it may be better to speak of reformations, plural, rather than the Reformation. Now, in particular, in this lecture, last time you'll recall we talked about Martin Luther and the Lutheran tradition. So in this lecture, we're going to look at the so-called Reformed tradition, as it has come to be called in later times. What this means fundamentally is the form of Protestantism that derives from the writings, the teachings of John Calvin. This means also, in a certain sense, we're going to move from Germany to Switzerland. Now, we're going to explore some of the different forms of the Protestant experience, and towards the end of this lecture, we'll compare them on several points to sharpen in our minds the things that they had in common and the things which separated them. We'll also consider two more of the masters of the magisterial Reformation. So, even though the Reformation in Switzerland and the Reformed tradition owes most to John Calvin, it got its start with another man whose name was Huldreich Zwingli. Zwingli was born in 1484. He died in 1531. If you're just sort of basically tracking these dates, it may occur to you that that's about the age of Luther, that's about the age of Thomas More, that's about the age of Erasmus. These men are all of a single generation. Now, Zwingli came from German Switzerland, that is to say, Eastern Switzerland, and originally he got a quite traditional education. He became a priest in 1506. He served as a parish pastor, indeed, until 1516, carrying on a quite conventional ecclesiastical career. But he began, as so many in his time, to be influenced by, indeed to be captivated by, the new humanistic scholarship of the day. He secured, for example, a copy of Erasmus's edition of the Greek New Testament. He began studying, in particular, Paul's epistles, which he actually memorized. But he began to study Paul's epistles. Now, there's something interesting here. Luther had studied Paul's epistles and was eventually drawn to religious reform. John Colet in England studied and taught on Paul's epistles and had been drawn to make important claims for the need for reform in the church. So here again we see Zwingli being particularly influenced by St. Paul's epistles. He began to feel a number of very serious concerns, Zwingli did, about contemporary practices. He was struck in particular by what he regarded as the superstitious folly of pilgrims. He noticed lots of people going off in pilgrimage to various shrines all over Europe. Now, parenthetically, we may say the very fact that Zwingli was able to observe this pilgrim activity and, indeed, in the end, to react badly, negatively to it, is a reminder that late medieval Christianity, or we might say late medieval Catholic Christianity, was by no means moribund. It was by no means moribund. Very important point. We are not seeing a Reformation come into a world that somehow had a religious vacuum. Well, Zwingli, in any case, as he began to reflect on some of the practices, some of the traditional Catholic practices that disturbed him, began to move in what we might call a reformed direction. He began publicly calling for reform, and in 1518, he was elected people's preacher in the city of Zurich. Now, the point there, of course, is that in the Catholic Church, of course, the bishop or a religious order appoints pastors in churches and can move them around and can promote them. Now, and Zwingli had held that position until 1516, now in 1518, the people of Zurich elect him as their preacher. He began lecturing publicly on Paul, and he began calling for reform, and he began to win a great deal of support. All right, this is an important point, too. And it signals to us that even if in talking about the Reformation, and particularly in a survey course like the one on which we're embarked now, we talk about the masters, we talk about Luther and about Zwingli and about Calvin, we mustn't forget all of those people out there who could accept or reject the teaching of the great masters and thus play an important role in sustaining this movement.